palace intrigue, opulent gifts, the mysterious or arcane, danger, deception, suspense, rescue, joy, the forces of good and forces of evil, divine guidance given through clear signs, through dreams and stars. Do we love this story of the Magi or what? And it is all capped off, beautifully wrapped up and tied with the bow of a happy ending. Or is it? True, the Magi, in their wisdom, heeded the warning to avoid Herod and Jerusalem and return home by another road. But their detour was not without substantial collateral damage. Only a few short verses later, an enraged and paranoid Herod would order the slaughter of all male children under the age of 2 in Bethlehem and the surrounding area. Did these wise men know, were they told in that dream, that this baby to whom they went to pay homage was born with a bounty on his head, and the blood of the holy innocents would be but the first installment? We can't know, but as Anglican bishop and theologian N.T. Wright notes, the shadow of the cross falls over the story from this moment on. So yes, what we call the Epiphany story, the story of the Magi, has all the elements of a Hollywood blockbuster. And like such movies, the plotline and characters speak to both the best and the worst that is in us. Let's start with the worst and look to our inner Herods. Who, me, we think? No, 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 I don't identify with Herod at all. Yet the truth is, the minute we think we don't, we already have. We are all Jerusalem. We are all those who, like Herod, are frightened by the mere thought of someone taking away our quote-unquote power. No matter how much or how little power we have, either perceived or in some way realizable, we do not want to let it go. We do not like it challenged or threatened. A simple example. Most of us do not want to lose the power to wake up in the morning. In the words of a song by country music star Kenny Chesney, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to go now. This pretty much sums up the oxymoronic condition of human beings. The promise of heaven, of eternal bliss, scares us to death. We know, we are familiar with this life. Better the devil we know is a common cliche. Supposedly enlightened by the Enlightenment and informed or over-informed by the information age, we cling to, we live by another cliche. Knowledge is power. Because, to a degree, it is. Herod secretly summoned the wise men for this very reason, intending to control events. In Sir Francis Bacon's original use of the phrase in Latin, and please forgive my poor Latin pronunciation, scientia potentia est, knowledge is power referred to God's knowledge, not any we might possess. Knowledge can give the illusion of power, which is why it is frequently followed by yet another cliche. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Cliche or no, one way or another, we are loath to cede ground, to leave the unknown for the unknown. Once we know or think we know something, we fear being wrong. Once we have or think we have power, we seem inevitably to fear its loss. We can acknowledge and admit our own brokenness and neediness, our own powerlessness in the face of the matters that matter most to us, our lives, our loves, our deaths. Yet fear of these truths consistently causes selves, systems, societies, civilizations, and yes, churches to collapse inward. Fear of facing our fears is fear's ace. An unfaced fear, denial, is fear's trump card. So how to face our fears, particularly our fear of ourselves, of our own dark places, our own inner Herods? The answer to this conundrum was born in Bethlehem and is waiting for us. If we are willing, like the Magi, to look for and follow the light, to listen to a voice not our own. James Taylor, the poet laureate of my years as a junior hippie, composed a song in 1988 entitled Home by Another Way. I quote, "Those magic men, the Magi, some people call them wise, or Oriental, even kings. Well, anyway, those guys. They visited with Jesus. They sure enjoyed their stay. Then, warned in a dream of Herod's scheme, they went home by another way. Well, it pleasures me to be here and to sing this song tonight. They tell me life is a miracle, and I figured that they're right. But Herod's always out there. He's got our cards on file. It's a lead pipe cinch if we give an inch. Old Herod likes to take a mile." God's great desire is union with us, and Herod's great desire is to prevent this, to keep us far, far away from God. In the birth of Jesus, in the incarnation, our God comes directly toward us, directly to us. God's brilliance shines almost blindingly in the particularity and the synchronism of the gospel stories, especially in the birth narratives. Luke gives us Mary's background and the shepherd's tale. Matthew recounts Joseph's experiences and the Magi's story. Multiple gospel texts give us multiple points of entry into, multiple perspectives on, this world-changing and life-changing event. The mysterious Magi, most likely astrologers, since royal blood is only imputed from the richness of the gifts they bear, bring a foreign element into the scene, immediately expanding the reach of this baby, the reach of this Jesus, from the Jews to the whole world. Matthew tells us only that they came from the east, that they observed his star at its rising. Why, one wonders, did these Gentiles feel called to seek out this child? How did they know he was born to be king of the Jews? If they were so wise, so knowledgeable, didn't they know there was already a reigning megalomaniacal Jewish king? As non-Jews, why did they care? Did the Magi even know each other? If not, how did they meet and where? Because there were three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, we think there were only three men. But Eastern Christianity often puts a number as high as 12. Tradition postulates that one wise man was from Persia, one from Greece, one from India. From this, one could deduce that each saw the star from a different perspective, from a different latitude and longitude. But each was looking at the same sky, and each still discerned the power of the portent. Conversely, if they knew each other, if they were colleagues of some sort, what drew them to discern in concert that they were to leave their country and venture into the unknown? To draw these men of means and status from the privilege and security of their known lives to set out on a long and potentially perilous journey, this star, this light, had power, otherworldly as well as worldly power, a power that combined things seen and unseen. The Magi were brought together, united and directed by something outside of themselves, by deep speaking to deep. At the risk of having you think that I have only one lens through which to look after our Holy Land pilgrimage, I am picking up that camera again. Just as the shepherds can be seen as the first missionaries, spreading glad tidings of great joy on their way back to the fields, the Magi may be seen as the first Christian pilgrims. At a gathering before our trip, I read this quote from 20th century theologian Richard Niebuhr. "Pilgrims are persons in motion, passing through territories not their own, seeking something we might call contemplation, or perhaps the word clarity will do as well, a goal to which only the Spirit's compass points the way." A goal to which only the Spirit's compass points the way. Only the Spirit's compass. But where is this compass? Is it within or without or both? How do we know that it is calibrated so that we are heading true north, toward home, toward God? Can we know this? I think that the Magi might just provide a guiding light in this regard. Living the tension between mystery and clarity, between contemplation and action, they ventured into the unknown based on the known, using what they knew while also admitting and seeking what they knew not. I think that they were given what Paul prayed the folks in Ephesus would be granted, a spirit of wisdom and revelation. This begs the question of when and how. Once again, Paul proffers answers. Wisdom and revelation come as we come to know Jesus, as we come to know him. Not instantly, not in a soundbite, not in an Instagram or tweet, but incrementally as a lifelong, committed, and reciprocal process of deep seeking, of deep speaking to, of deep hearing deep. The wise men saw both the star, the visible manifestation in the sky, and with the eyes of their heart, they looked for and saw that star's meaning, not all at once, but over time and distance, a longing for what was beyond the reach of their current knowledge, beyond their visible horizons, drew them to set their hearts on the pilgrim's way, on God's ways. Whatever the Magi's backstories, they did not leave their homes wedded to anything except following the star. They began only with a desire to pay homage, a desire to go and see and give of themselves and what they had. They were wise enough to wear themselves lightly and to pay attention to the Spirit's compass. They were willing to be led and to follow, and because of the openness, that openness, they were directed by the light to the light. And then, enlightened, they were guided. As poet Christian Wiman has written, "Fear all comes from one source, which is the isolated self, the self willfully held apart from God." The Magi turned, not willfully away, but willingly toward God. Matthew does not tell us the end of their story, but we do know one thing. In turning toward God, in seeking and finding Jesus, in believing and worshiping him, these men from the Orient were reoriented. All we know of the after effects of their encounter with the hope of the world is that they left for their country by another road. But that reorientation ostensibly saved their lives. For us who believe that other road, that other way, is the way of the cross, following this road forces us to face ourselves and our fears, especially our fear of loss, as Jesus himself did. Jesus leads us from paradox to paradox, not to obfuscate and confuse, but to make clearer, to enhance our ability to see. To live in and with the light, we must see our darkness, which is another way of saying we must be willing to lose our lives for Jesus' sake in order to find them. Once we admit our powerlessness, we are empowered by the immeasurable power of a God who is perfect love, a God who has come to us to cast out our fear by walking with us from cradle to cross, from garden to grave and beyond. Will we follow? Will we, like the Magi, be willing to alter our course and accept reorientation? For it is that reorientation, away from our Herods and toward our God, by, in, and through Jesus, that is the hope of the world, the hope to which we are called, and the hope which we are called to share. Believing in and following Jesus, or as James Taylor puts it, keeping a weather eye on the chart on high, will lead us through the worst to the best that is in us in the here and now, and home by another and internally more excellent way. It's a lead pipe cinch. If we give God an inch, he will go that extra mile. We call this saving grace. Amen.